Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Forest, a safe place where we have the freedom to think about life without judgment. We take a look at society, we examine it, and we allow for the possibility of something new, something different. And now, here's your host, Alan Ritter.
Well, welcome everyone to this, once again, Sunday night, beginning of the new week in this May the 7th, 2017. And once again, I was thinking about what subject I wanted to talk about tonight, not so much as that I don't have a plan for overall what I want to cover, but just how do I talk about the ins and outs of what I want to explain, because it doesn't suit everyone to explain it the same way. So I sort of challenge myself to with a different way into the material every time. So a lot of close contacts to me are suffering through friends' end of life or end of body life times, and it's a very traumatic experience, and it was always a very traumatic experience for me until it wasn't a traumatic experience for me anymore. And dying is always about a finality, and the body dying is seen as an end of something, a permanent end. It's seen as a permanence of not being here, a person, a name, a personality, something not being here anymore. So I wanted to, I didn't want to talk about the body dying, because I believe that the cell structure of the body, just like the cell structure of a tree, can certainly give up its cell structure, but that's not during object. The enduring thing is the soul of that caused that body to manifest. Cause that body to be as it was, to act as it was, to have the behaviors, to have the ailments, to seek as it sought, in order to address inward lusts and inward experiences, and I call that, I think the soul pulls toward, the soul crafts its reality to suit its, what it needs next, because it's building something it's building its next evolution with everything that it brings to itself. So there is the one choice of the soul to build like this, but then there's also the possibility of the infinite possibilities that are available for a soul not to wish to continue to exist. And I know, because all things are possible, that certainly that wish is possible. And I may have been upset enough in the past years to wish for such a thing, but not in any serious manner. So I guess my initial way into the material that I want to talk about tonight is the question of, is it possible for a soul to die? Is it possible for a soul to end itself? To intend so much in that direction that its light, its spark, its whatever it is actually ceases to exist, that it's for real. And I think it is possible, because everything is possible. And I'm not talking about the body, I'm talking about the continuous memory. Is it possible for the soul to, that collection of continuous memory, is it possible for it to cease? And I do think it's possible. And I think more than I think this question may be sort of the underlying truer visualization of the standard biblical question, do you believe in Jesus Christ, therefore you shall be saved? I think, do you believe in the fertility of yourself? Do you believe in yourself and what you want next above all others? And will you pursue what you need next in order to make yourself more fertile? And in acknowledging that, you will be immortal, versus buying into the quote-unquote temptation as set in front of all of us by this society, of the non-existence of quote-unquote divinity, quote-unquote God, quote-unquote immortality of the self. So there's some really interesting, I'm not going to dive into that. I mean, there's many programs just in considering that one question. It's a pretty interesting question. I'm just going to continue on. Maybe in a future program I'll get into that, but I didn't examine that so much in this program. So the question is, can you be tempted for the many lives it's going to take to embrace ending your eternal life, thus having no inspiration to bring your inner fertility to be manifest and to pull toward yourself building experiences for your soul, but to actually pull toward yourself ending experiences? And I think that all paths are possible, so that I think this is a possible path. So let's look at the society that we grow up in and who the players are and what they encourage, as to what in a mathematical sense may be going on here vis-a-vis this question that I'm posing. So the overwhelming majority of persons, humans, are owners and employees of the Temple of Death. So what do I mean by the Temple of Death? These are the folks who worship things like the meat diet, which is pathological to the human system, and also animal industry is inefficient and pathological to the ecosystem. So that's a pathology. They worship burning fires, which is also the use of resources. They revere gasoline engines, annual crop farming, which is incredibly damaging to improving soil fertility. It is the number one reason why deserts appear, annual crop farming is. And in an overall theme of the society is one of slavery. But let's think about that. It's the starting point for most folks in the Western world. I would say it's the dominant starting point. I mean, if you're looking in the place of playing a board game and you say, okay, what is my starting life condition? What is the starting perspective in my head that was created by my educational system? It'll be this one. You will be the exploiter, or you will be one of the exploited. You'll be in the slavery system. Probably the food that you're eating will be enslaving of other beings, and you'll be in an enslaver and enslavee situation. You'll be a member of that group. It is also the most common ending position in life as people pass from this life to the next life. Most common position at death of the body. We don't see, or we are not shown, that many people who have changed their perspective to what I would call, just to have another name for it, the temple of life, not the temple of death. And there are a lot of reasons that are reinforced by the temple to stay in the temple. It's very comfortable there. Everyone you know is in the temple. Everyone's lifestyle and entire life was spent in the temple. No one left the temple. And someone might have gotten married and moved to another country, but they didn't leave the temple. And so there are no reasons to leave the temple, and there's no reason to believe that there is something outside of the temple to live in. And of the few people that you may hear about who they're not described as living a different lifestyle, because that vegans are described as living a different lifestyle, or environmentalists are described as living a different lifestyle, but they're still worshiping inside of the overall system called government. And that system is inside of the Temple of Death, because government is a divide and conquer, divider and conqueror of your mind. Therefore, it is a utility. It is a facility. It is a system within the Temple of Death. So even to consider not being in a government situation, you can't really, you're like, okay, you're, someone looks at you and says, does that mean you're anti-government? And you don't have a grasp on what the solution is, what you're going to come up with as an answer to what you're proposing, but you're saying, yes, I am anti-government. Of course, if that person gives you 10 or 15 minutes to explain your mathematics and they're open-minded, maybe they understand you, but most people just say, oh, that person's crazy. So the perspectives that you begin to understand actually exist outside of the Temple of Death are discussed and written off, thought of by the Temple of Death as being insane. So from a position of starting your life inside the Temple of Death, you cannot really transition to the Temple of Life by discussing the ideas that you're having with the authorities who are in the Temple of Death. You can't have the experiences necessary while talking to those same people in order to make the transition, because they're going to diagnose you as having a mental issue. So you have to tread a pretty thin line of arriving at a self-sufficiency and a self-confidence so that you begin to actually not talk to the folks who you were brought up to say they know everything I need to talk about them, not need to talk to them if I have a personal issue. Psychiatrists, medical people, even friends are not going to understand what you're talking about. Friends who are going to understand what you're talking about are also making the transition to some extent. So what are these ideas that I'm talking about? I'm talking about universal love for all actions and behaviors, acceptance of the skill sets in each one of those behaviors, and acceptance of those skill sets as being hugely valuable for broadening your character and making your character less fragile than if it was a stick figure that only had skills in one area. Multidisciplinary skill sets offer incredible synergies and incredible strengths, and also incredible self-respect. When you come out from a circumstance that was pretty horrible and you realize that you did pretty well. And then the other thing that you develop, because you see the divide and conquer and the aggressive behavior of authority, is you develop disdain, and I'm not going to say any more aggressive terms for it, but you develop revulsion for authority, the authority who calls parts of all behaviors a crime. It's sort of as if you have this whole beautiful body of action and motion, and you cut part of it off, and you said, no, you're not allowed to go there, and the body or the circulatory system or the being actually wants to dance the whole dance, and for some reason, to create fragility and rulability, the authority says, no, you can't dance over there. So the other thing that you start to develop a disdain for is you develop a disdain for offloading work onto others by any means, and offloading work onto creatures, offloading work onto machines, offloading work onto, and by offloading work, you offload work. And if you did it, you would have skill, and you would have developed a skill to do it yourself, or to understand that you couldn't do it, but you need to overpay in order to, if you can't do it, you might want to learn it, and you might want to learn how to do it, but if you couldn't, if you just understood that you couldn't learn it up to the level of mastership that you required, you would understand and respect the other party's giving so much that you would be inclined to overpay, if at all possible, for what you were receiving. So how you can look at this is slavery and stealing, your standard job where the boss charges the customer more than your salary because he says, I've created a company, therefore I will pay my worker this, I will charge the customer this, but I make a profit just for being here. That type of slavery, and slavery of all different types of slavery of the earth, slavery of other people, those are favorite tools of those who subsequently announce that they've made a profit. But it's really insidious because people who have made that profit have avoided learning the skill, and they have avoided paying they got. I mean, when the soil is tilled and the fruit is harvested, who pays the earth? No one pays the earth. That's such a critical relationship. It's unbelievably critical as a relationship. That's theft. And the skill that is missed there is the skill that is gained by the lower tier, because the lower tier knows how to make the product. And then, like in a business, if you're a supervisor and you go to a programmer and you say, I want the following piece of software created, and they create the software, and you present the software, you don't know how to create that software. Well, there were so many lessons that person learned in order to build that software. The supervisor has missed the opportunity to learn that skill. So actually the profiteer at the end of the year, at the end of the decade, is less skilled and poorer skills, you know, okay, they have more paper in the, they have more electronic paper in the bank account and a bigger house and a bigger car, but they don't have the experience in their soul that was the skillful experience. And as I said, that's pretty insidious because it's those who lead the highest life and profit the most who reap the least skill advancement and are weakened in life. And this also gets back to another biblical saying, or another saying, and the meek shall inherit the earth. And I think you can see as I was writing this, these things were occurring to me as either sayings that agree with the mathematics that I'm coming forward with, or if something didn't agree with it, I just wouldn't even put it in here. So there's another wrinkle to add to this, and it is, how does this whole development that I'm making here or discussing here work in our present culture of fictional tasks? So right before the break, I'm going to explain what I mean by that, and then I'll continue on after the break with the rest of what I want to talk about tonight. So if the culture that we're in is a skill in reality, like a skill based in something common sense, a skill based in a truth, then that skill will be useful and will always be useful for as long as that truth is maintained. As long as there's dirt, you'll be able to understand truths about dirt. Well, it seems like maybe there's a longer term truth about dirt than maybe some other concepts. So if somehow we're brought into a culture of where all of the concepts that we're presented are fictional, we're presented with maybe what the sky is and what the objects within the sky are and where they are. We're presented with an explanation of that. And then we're presented with an explanation of the various types of matter are and how they interact together. And we're presented with an explanation of that. And then we're the world is explained as having a certain shape. And there's an importance, there's an explanation, so there's a rational explanation. Oh, this object is here and it's been around for this many years, and you take something from that. You take an importance of authority knows these things, so authority is omnipotent. And get out of that is later in life, you start to examine some of these concepts. And later in life, at least for me, and I know many other people have also had this happen, some of these concepts start not ringing true. And you start to find out that part of the reality that you were taught wasn't exactly correct. And after the break, I'll continue on with what I'm talking about. And really like this song by Darv the Bard, Green and Gray. Talk to you again after the break. Take care. Thank you.
and the 1st of May. A man in black came walking into a wooden glade, following the sounds of pipes on this beautiful spring day, high from the music that they made. But what beheld him within that place? A look of recognition fell across his face. Oh Lucifer, oh Lucifer, why do you appear to me? For I am a man of God, a priest. I'm no devil, I'm father to the man. I have seen him since the earth began. Neither black nor white, priest, hear what I say. I'm green and gray.
I'm green and gray. tune in to International Pagan Radio. You can hear your favorite artists such as Dave the Bard, Tuatha Dea, Spiral Rhythm, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, and many, many more. Join us for exciting shows like Ask a Witch and Storytime with Rook as well. www.internationalpaganradio.com on the net or on TuneIn Radio on your mobile devices. Join us on Facebook and Twitter too. International Pagan Radio, all pagan, all the time.
Welcome back to An Emerging Forest on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. We hope everyone was able to stretch their legs and get a drink. And now, back to Alan.
Well, welcome back. So, we were thinking about tasks and developing skills, but then what would happen if the skill sets offered or the intellectual material offered was of fictional nature, and let me explain sort of where you might encounter that. For a lot of, I'll just discuss it from my personal experience. A lot of people that I have encounter this fictional nature or this strange nature of what the society teaches as how things work, they discover that in the middle of their life when they're diagnosed with a life-threatening disease. This can be cancer, this can be diabetes, this can be some other big disease. Or big problem. And they think about it, and for some people, they just understand that the doctor isn't telling them the truth or something is strange. But for some reason, a journey is made from the perspective that they used to hold to a different perspective. So, as I said earlier in the talk, you start in the meat-based culture, and you change to the vegetable and fruit-based culture. And that is one of the areas where disease comes from. There are many other areas that disease comes from. And I don't view disease as I once did, even among the duality between the meat-based culture and the vegetable-based culture. I view experience that you're having as being what you need. So I don't point to anything and say it's disease. I point to everything and say that is the dance step that you are taking. It's fine. So some of these words are going to have old school or older school, from my perspective, meanings, but I kind of have to use them in order to get across the concepts that I want to get across. So some people can see, okay, in one perspective, the way I was brought up and the way many people are brought up, you're brought up in the meat culture, and then at some point you've understood the philosophy of physiology as taught by the medical school, etc. and as prescribed by the medical school and as served in the hospitals, etc., and as advertised on culinary shows worldwide, it's a certain way. And then you get to a life, maybe a life and death situation for yourself or a loved one, and something inside of you causes you to do a lot of work and change your mind, change your perspective. And that is not only, that is an instance of you finding out that there's something else from a different perspective to understand, but you have also improved your skill in many areas. I mean, that first breakthrough causes your skill in critical thinking to improve, causes your perspective on society to drastically change, or suspicion to start to arise as to the nature of society. And maybe not right then, but maybe, and maybe right then, you start to become an investigator of society, because you're looking at society and you're saying, okay, there was this large perspective shift. What else isn't exactly as it was, you know, what other strangeness or what other falsity was taught to me, was given to me. And this begins a pretty long process of riddle solving. I'd like to call it riddle solving. Understanding that a certain material that was presented to you is nonsense, but not pointing the finger at the presenter, but understanding that the presenter is there to teach you a skill that you need. And the skill that you need, like all life processes, is a phase that you have to pass through. And it's a phase that is piqued by curiosity. It's a phase that's piqued by a will for what's right, or the will for the mathematics that holds together, not the will for the mathematics that just falls to the floor, but the will for the solid, the more solid of the mathematics. And it's a process that improves skills like lie detection, watching people's faces, watching how they carry their bodies, watching how their mouths move, and in general, looking at body language, looking at the tone that they say things in. This is also called discernment, and discernment is basically reading a paragraph in a book and looking at the words and seeing whether the writer is whether the writer is telling you that they're lying to you. And that's, since I transitioned in more heavily in 2013 and 14, I find it pretty hard to read most books, because after a couple paragraphs, it's just fallen apart in front of my face. I mean, you can call these things lie detection, you can call them discernment, you can call it critical thinking, but it's incredibly important, because your time here is precious if you're developing those skills that I just discussed. But once you develop those skills to a point, you're always using them to say, okay, what's the next experience that I need to have here? What's the next experience that rises to the level of something that I want to spend time on. And as you can see, as you study things, you're studying them more for where do I spend my next block of skill learning time. And each thing that you're going to spend skill learning time, you want to verify that it's a real skill up to the level that you can verify it. And of course, this is a never-ending process. This skill verification, critical thinking, is also going to have many layers. What I have found is that this skill of critical thinking is so important that almost 100% of simple material that we were offered, or understanding of simple material, is false, and 100% of advanced material, sciences, etc., is definitely false. But I, for one, am not going to point a finger at the offerer and say that they were doing me a disservice. Far from it. I called that experience to me. It is a gift to me to improve my skills at being able to solve riddles. Because, you know, your worst antagonist is your best teacher. And the skill that you're least apt in is the one that's going to keep coming up and up and up in your face. A la karma, until you deal with it. It's doing you a favor. It's saying, this is your sore thumb, address it. So what is being grown here is a real pain in the butt investigative eye, a real Sherlock Holmes, a fictional character, of course, with a multi-dimensional set of tools for pulling things apart. And not anything else, because the material underlying it is false. So you're just going to investigate it. The riddle is going to snap in your mind, and you're going to fall through that level of reality. And then you're going to have had a level of reality based on some fluffy nonsense, but then you're going to have to say, well, what do I think my reality is now? And for some people, they actually need to make up a new story. But I look at it like this. I don't want a story, because I want to continue to investigate. And I don't want to spend the time to develop a story, so I don't really hold to a story. What I do is I watch other people, and I see other people using stories on other people to control them, and I watch that behavior. I watch the power moves of other people to see who other people are and how they're using, quote-unquote, knowledge and riddles on other people. So this process, it has distinct phases, and the process is first to allow yourself, or to have the freedom to question, or to be put in a life and death situation where death is something that is accepted by many. You accept the outcome of the quote-unquote disease or the condition, or you change your mind. So you may go with the social norm flow and not question, or for some reason you may question. So then you question and you arrive at a new perspective on the same material. And that new perspective is incredibly powerful, because it changes where you stand. It changes how you are viewing the world, how you are intent upon the world. And that is incredibly powerful because you are creating the experience that is brought to you to satisfy that intent. So if a large organization creates a school and educates 100% of its initiates to a certain perspective, they control the creation intent of all of those folks, but begin to have diverse perspectives on that issue, they hijack the creation intent to whatever admixture. You know, they begin to introduce these other non-uniform frequencies of creation into the larger creation school that was indoctrinated. And I hope everyone understands how powerful that interference is. So I'm going to skip an example that I wanted to talk about because I want to end close to normal ending time in a few minutes. So I just want to talk about where did I start? And I started not so much with realizations, but I started changing my diet in 2005. And then because it was there, for some reason, it was just there. I was very interested in the money system, and I started studying the money system, and that just tore apart. That just the differences between the Austrian economic buildup, notably explained by Ludwig von Mises. The Mises Institute is on the internet. There's many, many very interesting free PDF volumes, one of which I recommend to anyone is something like Money, Banking, and Economic Cycles by Huerta de Soto. And you can download that for free on PDF and just read the first two chapters. And there's such an amazing duality that's explained in just the first 27 or 54 pages that will certainly, hopefully, cause a change in your perspective and a change in your creationist intent upon the world. So what I've tried to talk about in this program tonight is something that could be a number of programs, but I wanted to encapsulate it tonight, and I'll probably revisit it on in some future programs or particularly interesting aspects of it that you are, as we've talked about, this incredibly ancient, powerful being of creation who's pulling experiences and pulling reality towards yourself. Because you pulled yourself into the situation and solved the riddles, now you are an independent creator, semi-independent creator from the mass school. This is the process of changing the mind from one who obeys the temple of death to one who questions it, and then to one who opposes it. This is the constant, I believe that you're constantly brought into this situation of, is this the way you are? Constantly ask this to the point where it's just self-evident that you just can be brought into a situation like exists here, and at some point rapidly or in your own time, you will just snap out of the acceptance of the divide and conquer, the acceptance of the slavery, the acceptance of lessening fertility, and you will become one who opposes such, because that's just the lessening of skills, and we're about increasing vibrancy and increasing fertility and increasing options. So you're not going to find yourself in a particularly nice situation. You're going to find yourself in a pretty bad situation when you accept a larger fraction of universal love. And where I found myself is I found myself blaming myself for my mother's death and not allowing myself a break, just basically saying, you don't deserve to live. And I isolated myself, as I've said in the past, for 18 months on a floor in several apartments just thinking about this, until for some reason, after watching a particular video or just after a certain number of experiences that had happened to me, I just understood that it was all the same and that it was all there of equal value, and that every action was required and every action was a gift, taken as well as given, from oneself to all and from all others to oneself. And in that instant, you change. And it's not that I changed then and I had stopped changing. Because I appreciated how the change happened, I've become even more interested in being an investigator and looking at reality and in looking at small pieces of myself that are still programmed. And in that moment, understand that we occupy one universal, safe space that we all learn in. And as I always do, I would just like to encourage everyone to brave enough to explore that space however you can, and to whatever extent your life allows you to explore that space. And have a great evening and have a great week. My name is Alan Ritter. My produce club, which serves southeastern Pennsylvania and southern New Jersey, produceclub.us. I am a tutor. I'm available on email at RITTER.ALAN88@gmail.com. Have a wonderful week and see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.